Ladies and gentlemen, step right up. Let's go see the elephant. When I'm a road.
Welcome to the show, folks, on a big Friday here in hot Orlando. You are listening to the American Adversary Sunday evening 3-hour classic. Wait a minute.
No.
You're here.
I'm here, but it's not the 3-hour classic tour. My goodness.
I should have recognized the music. That's right. It's the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show coming to you live on FM 105.5 and AM 660, The Answer. I am Christopher Hart, and sitting in tonight, usually he's always here on Sunday nights, except he was preaching last Sunday, so he missed this, but is none other than Aubrey Kahn.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Talk to the experts.
Yeah, you're going to be on there as a guest tomorrow.
Yeah. I was a little, confused at first when they asked me to be on the show. Bruce called. He said, asked me to be on a show. I thought it was a new one called Talk to the Ex-Jerks.
And then he said, no.
And he said,
I'll be hosting that one, too.
You and me both, brother. The shoe fits, right? Anyway, yeah, Talk to the Experts tomorrow. Aubrey Kahn hosts that show. Excuse me, live every Saturday afternoon from 1 to 3 p.m., and I will be tagging along tomorrow. So please tune in. It should be a lot of fun.
I have a lot of questions for this guy. He's following in the steps of Jesus. He's a carpenter.
Easy does it on the first part of that statement there. I'd like to be, but we would all like to. But, yeah, talk to the experts tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Please do join us. And, of course, as I said, Aubrey's on Sunday night with us for the 3-hour classic tour where we, of course, started on Sunday nights. Going on 6 years ago, coming up September.
There you go.
So, yeah, we got a lot to talk about today. Big show lined up for you. We have a guest going to join us at the second half of this hour of the show, and he would be Stephen Kuntz. You may have read some of his books. He has been on the New York Times bestseller list 16 times, and I'm pretty sure his latest book is going to be on there, too. It's a novel. It's called Liberty's Last Stand. And get this. It opens up with 4 terrorist attacks. A black Muslim president by the name of Barry Sotero
sounds vaguely familiar.
Imposing martial law, and we'll let him tell us from there. Anyway, that's Stephen Kuntz, and that ought to be a real interesting interview coming up, as I said, in the second half of this hour of the show. But, of course, you can join us at any time. The phone number is 407-774-8255. And you can also, and I hope you have, if you have a smart and mobile device, downloaded the WORL-FM-AM app into that thing. It's free. And you can do a whole lot of interaction with the station here, including our pretty much daily polls. We got a poll question for last night. I'll get to that here in a second. Also, that app enables you to be able to hear all of the live news talk programming, regardless of what is going on with the baseball programming. Baseball has this contractual thing, which works in our favor, if you will, that they can only be broadcasted over the airwaves, that their games can't be called on the internet. So, we are broadcasting on the internet, or whoever is scheduled at that time, and if you have that app, you can hear us. And if you just have a radio, you're going to be out of luck tonight. Now, on Sunday nights, you can listen to us at 1520 WBZW, but we don't have that ability during the week.
That reminds me, our program tomorrow is being interrupted by a makeup game of the Orlando Rays. So we will be on 1520 tomorrow from 1 till 3.
15:20 from 1 to 3. Okay. And, of course, though, if you have the app, it's not a big deal. You don't have to worry about it.
Right.
And if you go through the computer also, you'll get the live News Talk programming, and you can do that two ways. You can go to our website, brand new website, and got new stuff up on it, brand new stuff up on it even today. Talk about that here in a few minutes. And that's simply AmericanAdversaries.com. Hit the Listen Live button right there on the home page, and you'll hear whatever's being streamed via AM660TheAnswer.com. Okay? So, now, in terms of last night's poll question, we got carried away with the show. We had a lot of interesting phone calls and everything, and forgot to get around to announcing the final poll results. So we decided to leave that question up for today, and we put it up kind of late anyway. So, Nick LoCicero, can you remind our listeners what the poll question was? Tell us where we're at, and then, of course, we'll give the final results later on in the show.
All right, Chris. The poll question is, we want people to rate your excitement for Marco Rubio's re-election bid to the U.S. Senate. And you can go vote on the mobile app now if you'd like. And the results as they stand right now, let's see. And we have four different options here. In last place with 11% is a level of excitement of 2. He quit the job once. Why would I vote for him this time?
All right.
It's actually tied with that at 11% as well is excitement level number 3. I'll probably vote for him.
Ooh.
Okay.
This is not sounding good so far.
In third place here, level of excitement number 4, which is the top level of excitement you get, jumping up and down with excitement. That's 22%.
Okay.
But leading this poll, Chris,
I knew it,
with 55% of the vote,
don't say
is
it,
excitement level number 1, which
no,
is down there in the basement.
Oh.
I thought the American Adversaries already picked out a career for Marco Rubio.
I was trying to choose.
So they don't have a level minus 842.
No, unfortunately not.
Well, we did have about 24 options. We were going to get him set up with job interviews. I mean, we were going to help the man out. He just didn't appreciate it, I reckon. All right, thank you, Nick. And we'll give you the final poll request, results for that later on in the show.
Him and Pauly Girl should get married.
St. Pauly Girl. No, he's already spoken for. All right. And by the way, he has leapt ahead into the lead in the polls against both the Democrats and also against his Republican and now one Republican opponent left, Todd Wilcox, one of the businessmen, held out a little bit longer than the other politicians, and he has gotten out. And that leaves now only Carlos Baruff challenging Marco Rubio. And once again, that primary is August the 30th, when you can also vote for our man, Grant Malloy, if you are in Seminole County, for Seminole County Clerk of Court. All right, well, you know, big news today, obviously, is Britain has voted to exit the EU, the Eurozone, European Union, and this is huge, and right there in the middle of it was Donald Trump at his golf course.
His new golf
there.
Course, yep.
Yeah, well, new old golf course. It's an ancient golf course, really.
Recently acquired.
Yeah, and renovated it and changed some of the holes, and a lighthouse went with it. And now there are two suites in the lighthouse, we found out this morning. And it was interesting because all the networks, you know, were following him to get his comments about Britain exiting European Union, and he starts off talking about his golf course. I mean, it was beautiful. They were all beside themselves. They didn't know what to do, you know, so they started going to the split screen in case he was going to say something, you know, that they wanted to hear, that they were going to go back to him, which they did. But it just showed that he was in control. He was in control of the moment, right? They were they were following him. They had to follow his lead. Even in the live television broadcast, they were following his lead. They gave him the split screen. And when he got around to saying something about the vote and answering questions, boom, they were right there, right there. And, of course, he was on the winning side of this one. And
anyone that takes up opposition to Obama is already on the winning side. Come on.
Well, I liken it to them building a wall. Britain, built a wall with this vote. They said, we want a wall. They said, we want separation, all right, from all this nonsense going on in Europe. We want separation from this mass migration. We have had enough of it, and we want a pause in it. We want to go back to national sovereignty. We don't want to be simply a part of Europe. We want to be the UK, the United Kingdom. We want to be Britain. You know, we don't want to be told by people in Brussels how to run our affairs in Liverpool or wherever, right? And so it was a pretty decisive vote. You know, when I got home last night, I started tuning in to watch the results, and even with just a few votes in already, you could see that something was brewing. And then you started seeing the sad faces on the broadcasters,
the posters, right.
And you realized then that this thing was not going the way they wanted it to go.
Yeah, and it had an 8-point swing.
An 8-point swing, according to the polls. But this is huge, because I believe it signifies a pendulum swing, if you will, a pendulum swing. Not just amongst the Brits, a pendulum swing amongst a whole lot of other people in the West. And we'll talk about what I mean by that and why when we come back from the break. But don't forget, you are listening to the American Adversaries. It is Friday. It's hot out there. Be careful if you're out in that heat. But we'll be right back.
Hot.
I'm a loser, and I'm not what I appear to be.
Yeah, that's what our dear president's been singing all day long. He's a loser. He went over there to Britain to put the political mojo on him, and he got it put right back on himself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Donald Trump even said today that had he not got involved, it might have turned out differently.
Yeah, probably.
That's what you call suddenly turning the screws on Obama. It was a huge defeat for Barack Obama because he is a globalist. He is a one-world government type.
But have you noticed who it was that voted to stay in the Union?
Well, who?
All right. It was all the elite.
And?
The people in London. The Muslims.
And the young.
The young.
The very young.
Right,
also.
Who are all leaning socialist like they do in this country.
Well, plus, I don't believe the young remember a different time. You know, the older Brits, they remember better days, well, and days when their country was their country. The younger people, that's not their world. It's like a world before iPhones, right? They can't relate to that. You see what I'm saying? But the older folks, they do. And they see how different it is now, and how different in a bad sense.
But have you noticed how the press are bemoaning what the elderly or the older middle-aged people have done? And they're praising the youth.
Well, of course, because they're
Their agenda.
Well, they're part of the elite and the elite's right. agenda. Correct, right. And in that sense, they're out of touch. Well, and this proves it.
And remember, with age comes wisdom.
That's what they say. Some people it does, some people it don't, or maybe they just need a little more aging. I don't know, one or the other, but. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And also geographically speaking, I should say, in the areas where you have more dense Muslim populations and population centers, and where they got like Sharia courts, and there's like 88 Sharia courts in Britain now.
Right.
That also, other than the Muslims, the people voted overwhelmingly to exit. The more you got away from those areas, the more the voting tend to be stay. You see, once again, it's like if things didn't change, or if things were the way they used to be, or the way they have always been to you, you voted to keep things the way they are. But if you remember a better time, you voted to change. And there were enough out there who remembered the better times that they've outvoted those who didn't know better. And that's basically what it boiled down to. Those who don't know better lost to those who do.
Right.
All right. And thank God for it.
Amen.
And I know that there are some out there lamenting this vote and predicting gloom and doom. I mean, Michael Medved was doing it, and I was listening to him on the way into the studio. And there may be some short-term pain, but Indus is great opportunity. Believe you me, Indus is great opportunity. And the people in Britain will rise to the occasion. And I think this is going to be in the not so long term, it's going to be obvious that this was the wiser path to take. Because if we want to preserve Western culture, we must act to preserve Western culture.
I agree.
And what Britain did today was voted to preserve Western culture. That's really what this boiled down to. Were they going to maintain their Western values, their Western culture, or were they going to let it be melted into something no one yet even really understands? Or maybe some of us do.
Called Sharia.
Yeah, but many of us don't. And this, once again, I believe this vote was huge. I believe it's huge not only in politics on that side of the world, but obviously it's huge in politics on this side of the world. There was Donald Trump right in the middle of it. And, of course, he went over there for that golf course, and I'm sure he knew that today was going to be the day after the Euro vote, right? And so he went over there, and sure enough, history favored his side of the argument. He was much more subtle about it. He said, look, if it was up to me, I'd vote to exit, but it's up to the people of Britain, and I'm not going to tell them what to do. And I don't think Barack Obama should have told them what to do either. And that's what he said before the vote, and he, of course, reiterated that today after the vote. And it really does make the president look weak. Well, so what else is new, right? It fits right in. But it means that his rhetoric even no longer, you know, resonates. That all those grand speeches and grand words are beginning to fall more and more on deaf ears.
The only place Barack Obama has any power over anybody is here at home. He cannot write executive orders for the UN or other countries.
But even that is on the wane.
Even that is on the wane. Because we had the 4-4 decision through the Supreme Court
yesterday on the
immigration. And he was bemoaning the fact that his guy didn't get to vote to be on the Supreme Court.
Yes, Garland.
Garland.
Yeah, Merrick Garland.
Well, you know, at the same time, our guy died.
Well, that's a misnomer because even if Garland had been confirmed, he would not have been able to participate in that decision because he did not hear the arguments in the case, right? So he would not have been able to make a ruling on it. So, but that aside, it's been a bad week for Barack Obama. It's been a bad week for the elitists because the world has turned away from them in a very dramatic fashion. And it appears as though, of course, along with this defeat for the Euro vote over there, the defeat for the people who wanted to stay in the Eurozone, European Union, is that David Cameron resigned. They're going to have another election now over there, and it's going to be about the same time as our election. And they got a guy running over there. His name's, I believe it's Boris Johnson. He's the former mayor of London. And he looks like he's Donald Trump's younger brother.
Oh, boy.
I mean, he's got the funky hair, not as funky as Donald, but he's got the funky hair, and he's brash, and he's bold, and he's outspoken. And he was an excellent mayor of London, and he is now, because he was at the forefront of this vote to leave the European Union, he is now in the forefront to become the next PM over there. And so let's just say history is seeming to fall into place for some similar things to happen over here. Not only did Barack Obama have a bad week, but Hillary Clinton had a bad week too. If for no other reason than after all that's happened over the last few weeks and all the people who were saying that Trump is done, he's through, he's a buffoon, what's he doing talking about judges and this and that, he's a racist. Well, he's still leading in two of the three battleground states, Ohio and Pennsylvania. He trails here in Florida, but depending on the poll, depending on which poll you're looking at, it's within the single digits. And he's within striking distance. And nationwide poll, Reuters poll came out yesterday, showed him within 5 points nationwide. That is not a good week for Hillary Clinton. She should be burying this guy if all the pundits were right, but all the pundits are wrong. And they don't understand that the pendulum is swinging back the other way. And once it happens, you can't stop it. It'll only stop when its momentum runs its course. In other words, when it swings far enough the other way. And the problem that the liberals have, and I talked about this way back when we first started doing this show on Sunday night, September 5th, 2010. All right, now if Jeff Sinis was here, he's going to be back Sunday night. He'd take. He was there that night. All right? I talked about how the further the liberals push that pendulum their way, guess what? The harder and farther it's going to swing back the other way. Okay? It's sort of physics, if you will. Right? If you push a pendulum higher one way, it will swing higher back the other way. Now, of course, it'll still always go back. It's a pendulum. It goes back and forth. But the problem that the liberals have, especially with Barack Obama, is that they have pushed this here pendulum way off to the left. And it's fixing to run way back off to the right. And a lot of the liberals and a lot of conservatives are going to get knocked around by it as it swings by. Because they're not going to understand what's going on. And as I've said before, Donald Trump is riding the wave like Duke Conamoho, buddy. He knows what he's doing. He feels the pulse of the nation, maybe perhaps even the Western world now. Look out! The American Adversaries coming back to you after this short break.
More political mayhem is on the way. You're listening to The American Adversaries, if you can take it.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks. That's right, you got The American Adversaries. It's hot Orlando. And we are here. We are live on FM 105.5 and AM 660 The Answer. It is drive time, prime time, radio time. And you can be a part of the show, too, 407-774-8255. We're going to get our author lined up here for you, but the book is out, and it's a Regnery Publishing book, and Regnery Publishers, I should say, are the publishers of the book, and you can get it, of course, at any book distributor, and it's called Liberty's Last Stand. Real quick, once again, before we get that author on, as I said, I liken this to the UK said, we want a wall. We don't want to be a part of Europe unless we can be the UK and be a part of Europe. We don't want to be blended in and just be a
like NAFTA.
Yeah, something like that. And so, of course, even with the threat from Barack Obama that they would be, as he said, go to the back of the queue, which, of course, is their word for line over there. I'd like that. I liken it to he told him, do it my way or I'm going to put you in the back of the bus. Is basically what he said over there, right? And as he was trying to assert his influence.
Manly authority.
Yeah, didn't go too far, did it? Mm. All right. As I said, we have an author with us this afternoon. He's been on the New York Times best-selling list 16 times, and what you want to bet, he's going to be on there a 17th time with his latest book. It's called Liberty's Last Stand. So let me welcome to the show today Stephen Kuntz. Stephen, thank you for being a part of the show. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It's a delight to talk to you.
Well, sir, this book is out, and ironically enough, it came out about the same time as the terrorist attack down here in Orlando, and by gosh, you kind of called it. I mean, I have not read the book, but I've read some reviews, and it looks like you just about called that attack.
Well, I wrote the book in 2015, Chris, and I posited a terrorist attack, actually three of them at the opening of the book, but that was sort of predictable. It's never a question of if we're going to have more of them. It's only a question of when, especially considering the number of undocumented Middle Eastern refugees that we're pour into the country.
Now, this is a novel, but obviously you're basing it on historical events and predicting historical events.
And predicting the future in some cases. The amazing thing is that I predicted that the current president, Barry Satoru, the fictional president, would declare martial law after such terrorist attacks, which would cause Texas to declare its independence. And here's the Brexit vote last night, and decided that they were leaving the EU. And the question today in many people's minds is, could Texas do the same thing? So that's pretty heavily covered in the book. That's certainly part of what it's all about. And so I think that it's eerily prescient, and I can't claim credit for that. I guess, you know, the world's a weird place.
To say the least, especially in this day and age. Obviously, you picked the name for your fictional, quote-unquote, fictional president in the book, Barry Satoru. You're unabashed that you're relating that character to the president of the United States, are you not?
Indeed. You know, the fictional character is a very thinly disguised Barack Obama. In fact, so thin that some people claim you could read a newspaper through it.
I'll say. I mean, you spelled Satoru differently than the other ways I've seen it spelled, but I mean, it's all right there. But, you know, one thing that a lot of our listeners, to be serious, are worried about is this martial law thing. A number of our listeners are convinced that he's going to try to do something like that to retain power.
Well, that has been certainly been speculated, and the speculation last year is what gave me the idea to go ahead and write the novel. And what if? What if it happened?
Right.
And so that was the driving force behind the novel, was this speculation, and it's not just a bunch of nuts speculating that. You know, a whole lot of people in Texas and elsewhere have don't think very highly of this guy's motives.
And of course, he breeds this mistrust with all these executive actions and things, where he's, you know, acting like a dictator, if you will, and not just doing the executive actions, but then kind of like, you know, sticking it in your eye, like, I'm doing this because it's the better way. You know, I have the moral authority, and that makes people nervous.
Well, it should. You know, our system of government is set up on a federal system. There's three branches of government. Each has their own sphere, the executive, judiciary, and the legislative. And when one branch sort of seizes power and attempts to do all three, that's the class book definition of dictatorship, of tyranny. And I notice that President Obama just got overruled by the Supreme Court on his attempts to make citizens out of 4 million illegal Mexican immigrants, and the Supreme Court tied 4-4, let standing and lower court ruling that was unconstitutional.
Yeah.
So of course, President Obama got on, made a speech, and as you say, he took the moral high road. He was doing the right thing. And, you know, the fact that you can't do that under the American system of government apparently escapes you.
It evidently does. And it also escapes him the fact that who's to say that he knows what the moral high ground is, right? That's the brilliance of our form of government, is it leaves it up to the people, so to speak. And like the Trump said this morning, the people got their way over there. And let me ask you something, and I don't want you to give away the end of the book. And by the way, folks, we're speaking with Stephen Kuntz. He's the New York Times best-selling author. His book, Liberty's Last Stand, is available now. And as he was just describing, it opens with terrorist attacks and a black Muslim president by the name of Barry Satoru, who imposes martial law. Without getting too deep into it, what does Congress do in your novel? Because, you know, there's a lot of people dissatisfied with Congress out here, too.
Well, Congress, our real Congress, seems unable to come to grips with these extra-legal activities of our president. And so I used that and had the president just jail his political enemies and suspend Congress and announce they can't meet and legislate until after the emergency's passed, in his opinion. And so, and also stop, suspend the writ of habeas corpus, which means that he can jail his political enemies and hold them without charge for as long as he wishes. I don't know that that's too far-fetched.
Well, you know, what makes me real nervous is not if, I mean, I be honest with you, it's a very intriguing storyline, but I don't see it happening if, say, Hillary Clinton gets elected or Joe Biden, if he comes riding to the rescue for the Democrats. But if Donald Trump gets elected, I'm not so sure your story is that far off, Stephen.
Well, the sad fact is that these extra-legal precedents that Obama is doing are precedents for every future president, and they're precedents that I personally find frightening. We really don't want a president who rules by decree. We want the Congress to either move or fail to move, and to answer to the voters. And the president gets to accept a bill or veto it. That's the American system. It's worked pretty well for 230-some years, and most of us like it.
Yeah, indeed. Stephen Kuntz is the author that we're speaking with. And, Stephen, I just got this from one of our listeners, Jenny. Thank you, Jenny. And it is, did you hear that Obama released bin Laden's bodyguard from Guantanamo Bay today? Not only is he looking to create martial law, but he's also doing what he can to create the conditions that would warrant such a thing.
Indeed. I think so, too. But obviously, that's just my judgment. And this book is a big book. It's a saga, if you will. And in the reviews, conservative readers praise it to the skies, and some of the liberals who have read it claim there's everything from right-wing propaganda to right-wing pornography. And so, you know, I would suggest that if your listeners are liberal, they probably save their money and invest in something else, somewhere else. But I know that your conservative and middle-of-the-road voters will find the book fascinating.
I'm sure, and I can't wait to get my hands on a copy now that I've seen a little about it. Once again, the name of the book is Liberty's Last Stand. Stephen Kuntz is the author. He's a New York Times best-selling author, and I'm sure this one's going to make it to the list as well, especially with everything that's going on in our world, and, of course, right here in Orlando. And, Stephen, when you were writing this book, did you have hope that it's sort of a warning-type thing that people might sort of take seriously?
Well, yes, indeed. That is the whole purpose of the book, to entertain and warn. I personally like our system of government the way it is, but it's sort of spun out of control. The thing, one of the reasons the British were so outraged with the EU is these vast EU bureaucracies that were making decisions affecting British citizens with no input whatsoever. And yet that's the same thing that's happening in this country. So much of Congress has turned over their legislative authority to these vast federal bureaucracies like the EPA and the BLM, and the list could go on. And the citizens really have no input, and Congress seems to be institutionally unable to to oversee this. And so we end up being ruled by a bunch of GS civil servants who obviously, in a lot of cases, take their orders directly from the president.
Yeah, I believe in the old Soviet Union, they used to call them apparatchiks.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed they did.
Yeah. Is there a hero or a heroine in your book?
Oh, yes. The book, the heroes are Tommy Carmelini and my old standby, Jake Grafton, who's been in about 18 of these things.
Yeah.
And the female hero is Tommy's girlfriend, Sarah Houston, as well as other women too numerous to mention, including the wife of the governor of Texas.
All right.
So I think that the female readers will be fascinated by the characters, and all of whom, like us, all of whom operate in little spheres but contribute to a much larger the national life, if you will.
Yeah. I like that phrase you used a little while ago. It dawned on me that's kind of what we try to do here, too, entertain and warn, educate and warn. And it sounds like this is a great way to do that with this novel. Do you see any hopeful signs for the United States and what happened in Great Britain last night?
Well, you know, I think that the British exit from the EU certainly ought to be a warning to the liberals who run the government in this country. Our citizens have a great many of the same complaints, issues that the British do. Everything from uncontrolled Muslim immigration, bureaucracies out of control, surrender of sovereignty. The states have bitterly complained in court cases and everywhere else that the federal government is overreaching into states' authority. It seems like that there's the Interstate Commerce Clause and a few others have just swallowed the states' rights to legislate on non-federal matters. And the classic, of course, is the school curricula that gets crammed down every state's throat from the federal government. They tell the teachers what they can teach in school. The school lunch program, you know, you got to be kidding me. We have the federal government telling the local school board what they can serve in the cafeteria. This is just beyond explanation.
It is. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, we're speaking with Stephen Kuntz. He's the New York Times bestselling author. His book, Liberty's Last Stand, is available right now. And he's put in novel form concerns that are on all of our minds. And it sounds like a book that we really need to get. It sounds like it would be a great gift for a conservative in your family, or maybe for a liberal who needs a little hint, all right? And not in a textbook form, but in a novel fashion, because sometimes, you know, that has more emotion to it, and it perhaps will make that, you know, ring the bell, so to speak.
Well, the hope is that the fictional format can put some of these issues in a dramatic form that make them a little bit easier to understand.
Yeah. Do you have a website, by the way?
Oh, yes, Kuntz.com, but they got to be able to spell my name, Kuntz.
Kuntz.com, okay. And I take it they can see, like, excerpts of the book there?
I'm sorry, say again, sir?
Can they see excerpts of your book there?
Indeed, there's an excerpt there, and there's two beginnings that got left on the circular file, and it's actually the beginning that's in it now. It's the third one, and so they're up there. And a lot of stuff, Kuntz.com, you can see all that on the website. It's the first book on the website, and I invite folks to get on it.
All right. And I don't want you to give me any details, but does it have a happy ending?
Well, that's debatable. It's a semi-happy ending.
Okay.
And I think that that's probably about the best that can be said for it.
Well, that sounds more...
It's really about a second American Civil War, and it's impossible to wrap that up in one novel. But
I was going to ask you, are you planning on a follow-up to it? The sequel.
Well, I'm not so sure I'm going to do a sequel to this book as so much the next book I hope to write about Europe. And, you know, Europe is just a boiling cauldron over there right now.
Oh, it is.
That, this morning, the news was that 88% of the Dutch people that were polled favor in or out vote on the EU, a la Great Britain.
Yep.
And
I believe the Netherlands, too.
And that the poll went on and said if such a vote were held today, the majority of the Dutch would vote to leave the EU. Mm-hmm. And so Europe has lots of problems.
Indeed, they do. So it sounds like you got a novel in the making already there.
Yes, sir.
Well, Stephen Kuntz, thank you so very much for being on the show today. And once again, I'm sure this is going to be another bestseller for you. And good luck with it. And we'll look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Okay. Well, hey, you guys have a great weekend.
And you do the same, sir. Keep up the good work. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Once again, that's Stephen Kuntz, the author of Liberty's Last Stand. And Kuntz.com is where you can find those book excerpts. And, of course, you can get this book at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any of the book, you know, outlets. It is a Regnery publishing book. And, of course, Regnery is part of the Salem Media Group. We're proud to be partners because you get the best authors from Regnery. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we still got some more to talk about. And if you'd like to join us, of course, you can do that. How about that Obama letting Bin Laden's bodyguard go? They should have planted him in the Mediterranean Sea, or Persian Gulf, I mean, with Bin Laden, wherever it was they dropped him off.
He lets everyone go.
I would have. All right. We'll be right back with more of the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show. Kind of biblical, you know what I mean? Fits the times. Welcome back to the show, the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show. Thank you for being with us on this Friday afternoon. These are biblical times, big things happening in world history, consequential things happening in world history. What the Britons did last night, believe me, was extremely consequential. What they did was they said that the nation state is not going to go away yet, that the idea of national sovereignty is yet still here for a while, at least, to stay. And I think we are going to follow their lead. By the way, that bodyguard of Bin Laden's that Obama released today, he did not release him into the custody of the Saudis or the Egyptians or the Yemenis or the Qataris. He didn't release him into anyone's custody. He was released unconditionally. That means he can go pretty much anywhere and do anything he wants. Who knows? He might even come back into this country as a doggone refugee and have Barry Satoru Obama put him up in a hotel or something right down the street from us.
Well, how many of these highly, how should we say, largely peace-loving Muslims that have been released have not returned to the battlefield?
Well, it's about a 50-50. But it's just too bad that this guy was apprehended before we found Bin Laden. Because if he had still been Bin Laden's bodyguard when we found Bin Laden,
he wouldn't be here today.
We'd have dealt with him the way he should have been dealt with. All right? All right, Ed is on the line. Thank you for calling tonight, Ed. We appreciate you being there.
Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Hey, God bless the British people. And God save the Queen.
Amen to that.
What a great day today.
It is.
In the early 90s, in 92, I actually took a class over there in London and spent the summer there, and I studied the EU. And that was when they were trying to get into it. And they had all these fancy preachers trying to say, get into the EU, da-da-da. My favorite book, but was just a little book. It was called Bluffing Your Way Through the EU. Because it just made fun of it, poked at it, and says it'll never work. And, you know, they did finally join up in 93, and the currency came around 99 or 2000. But the fact of the matter is, it is nothing but a globalist agenda.
Exactly.
And I'm just so glad that the British people saw through the smokescreen and got their way out. And now I'm hoping the United States people, the American people, wake up and we get ourselves out of the UN and all their agendas for us.
Now
that would be a great day.
That would be a great day. It absolutely would, because the European Union was just an extension of the UN. And you're right. It was an attempt at globalization starting in Europe, and the whole point was to have it spread outward around the world. And it is not working, and it won't work, not in this day and age. And you're right. Thank God for the, you know, God save the Queen. Thank God for what they did.
Yes.
And I, as I said, I think that that what they have done is reestablished a world order that the liberals thought that they had done away with. The world order that consists of sovereign nation states that can decide their own policies, can set their own currencies, print their own currencies, do their own deals, so to speak. And they don't like that one bit. Ed, thank you for the call. I got to take a break. It's a hard one, and we'll be right back on the other side. You are listening to the American Adversaries, and we're still here when the break is over, so I hope you will be too.
Ladies and gentlemen, step it right up. Let's go see the elephant. When I'm a road.
Welcome to the American Adversaries, or welcome back to the American Adversaries, Drive Time Prime Time Show. In either case, we want to thank you so very, very much for being with us tonight. That's right, you got us here. We are live on FM 105.5 and AM 660, The Answer. At least for now, at 6:30, the Rays pregame show will start. They're playing Baltimore tonight. Hopefully they're going to have a little more luck tonight than they had the last week. Anyway, the pregame show starts at 6:30, but we'll still be on the air we'll still be on the radio until 7 o'clock. Not so much the airwaves, but if you have a smart device and have downloaded the mobile app, we will be on the airwaves as you receive it on that mobile smart device, and that app is free to download. It's the WORL FM AM app, and you can, of course, listen to us on the computer as well, or as one of our listeners does, as long as we got a phone line open, you can call, and we'll put you on hold, and you can listen that way. But at 6:30, the Rays are going to come on, so in either case, I hope you're still with us for the whole hour of the show. I am Christopher Hart, along with Aubrey Kahn, and we're going to be talking with each other quite a bit over the next couple of days, because I'm going to be on your show tomorrow, and of course, you're back on.
And then we're back on Sunday night.
American Average Series Sunday night. Yeah, I'll be sitting in with Aubrey tomorrow on the Talk to the Experts show, and that airs live at 1 o'clock, and tomorrow will be on 1520 WBZW, because the Rays are playing a doubleheader to make up a game that was canceled evidently earlier in the year. So that'll be tomorrow, 1520, and then, of course, Sunday night we'll be right back here on the Big Stick, as they call it. All right. Nicholas Cicero is on the bridge. 407-774-8255 is the number. We do have a poll question up. We're running the same one from last night because I forgot, and we went off the air and didn't give you the final poll results, and we kind of put it up a little late anyway, so we wanted to give it a full hearing. It has to do with our dear friend Marco Rubio. Right, Nick?
Yes, it does, Chris. So we're asking to rate your level of excitement for Marco Rubio's reelection bid to the U.S. Senate.
I'm so excited.
On a scale of 1 through 4, with 1 being the lowest, 4 being the highest. And so here we go. It looks like at 12% is number 2 on the excitement level. He quit the job once. Why would I vote for him? this time.
12%.
Yeah. Coming in at, looks like 14% is number three on the excitement level. I'll probably vote for him. not so bad there.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Still not so great.
Yeah, not so great.
Yeah.
With 24% of the vote is option number four there. So you're pretty darn excited there. Pretty darn excited, jumping up and down with excitement.
24%, yeah. That means.
Yeah. But about half the people
still
who voted in this poll are way down here. Not that excited. In fact, they say, I thought the American adversaries already picked out Rubio's next career.
We had a few lined up, you know, Shoeshine Boy, Bellhop. We had quite a few actually lined up for him. I guess he just, you know, wasn't there for him. He now just has one opponent in the Republican primary, Carlos Baruff. And he leads him handily, and he also leads both Alan Grayson and Murphy, Congressman Murphy, I believe, is the other Democrat.
Please beat Alan Grayson, whatever you do.
Murphy might even take him out in the primary.
Please.
Marco, it's now once again his Senate seat to lose, it appears. And lose they did last night. Those who wanted Britain to stay in the Euro, European Union, certainly lost big. I think also the forces towards globalization lost yesterday and are going to lose here in the fall. I do believe that this is, I don't want to say omen, but I do believe that this has political significance here in the United States. There are many of the same sentiments here in the United States. People who want the United States to be the United States, who don't want the United States to be some part of some global, you know, one world government nonsense. We are all one type. We're not. I mean, the human beings are just by nature not that way. And then when you add in ideology and religion and all this other stuff, the whole world is not going to be a melting pot. I'm sorry. And the globalization forces who thought that they could force that upon the world are finding that is going to be a far more difficult task, especially after the brave vote by the people in the United Kingdom last night. Because let's face it, this was a brave vote. They stood up in the face of all kinds of dire predictions and dire warnings, and they're going to get spanked, I believe, also in the process, because the forces that do want this one world government are not going to go away easily. They're not going to, you know, just tuck their tail and run. They're going to fight, and they're going to try to hang on. It's going to take a couple of years anyway for Britain to untangle themselves from the web, if you will, of nonsense, but nonetheless, they are going to be hard at it, and David Cameron is not going to be a part of it. But it will be a task that I'm sure a lot of them will be happy to do, and a lot of people here in the United States are going to be more than happy to help build a wall, for instance, between us and South and Central and Mexico, South and Central America, and Mexico. And I believe, in essence, figuratively speaking, if not eventually literally speaking, considering Ireland, Northern Ireland may now want to stay in the European Union, they may decide to withdraw from the UK, there may eventually be literally a wall built there. But I believe this is as significant as Trump saying he wants to build a wall on the border, because, as he says, if you don't have a border, you don't have a country. And I believe that's what the Britons were saying yesterday, the ones who voted to exit. If we don't have a border, so to speak, if we're not sovereign, then we're not a nation. And we are, after all, Britons, right? We are the UK. We're not, I want to be careful the way I say this, we're not everybody. We're Britons, and we want to be Britons, and we're Americans, and we want to be Americans, and there's not a thing wrong with that, right?
But so, that's not the way the liberals want it.
It's not the way they want
it. They want a one-world government and everyone to be subservient to them.
Which is why it is so hugely significant that they lost And this was a big vote, obviously.
It was huge.
The whole world was watching. The whole world's, if you will, suffering the pain of the result of the vote because of the stock markets. But look, you know, as McBath says, when it's bad, it's good. If you got cash money laying around right now, you got bargains galore. Bargains.
That is true.
Bargains. And they're there for the taking. And but it's for most people, it's hard to see that sort of thing. But this you know, the pain will pass and the good times will come again. And believe me, the Britons, I believe, are going to be very happy in the future generations with this vote, because they will still be Britons. And that does have meaning and significance. If we don't have identities, then we don't really know who we are. And even if that identity is tied to a religion or a region of the world, it is still nonetheless an identity. And that doesn't mean that we have to go to war over our separate identities, but to have the separate identities, I believe, is a good thing, right?
Oh, definitely. There's, you know, why do we have last names?
Well, if we're oftentimes told that diversity is good, right? Well, if we're all the same, how can you have diversity? Right? Try to answer me that question.
Stop arguing like a government.
That's more of a paradox there, I guess. Anyway, it was huge, and there's Donald Trump right in the middle of it, where he belongs. And he called it, or at least he said he thought they should get out. That's what he would vote, and they did. And Barack Obama lost. It was a huge defeat for Barack Obama. He's had an awful week. He of course, lost, and it should have been a much worse loss, but he lost in the Supreme Court because of the tie vote. But once again, just imagine if he had gotten Garland confirmed, or if, you know, Hillary or another liberal becomes president, all of that would have been, you know, Obama would have gotten what he wanted.
Right.
So I believe this does have a great deal of political significance. It will. I don't know if it will portend anything other than that. As I said, the pendulum is swinging back the other way, and I believe it's going to work in Donald Trump's favor. I really do. I believe that they have sort of been the bold ones to take the first step, and hats off to the Brits for that. And I believe now a lot of Americans who might not been quite so bold before might say, well, you know, maybe we can. Maybe we can do this here thing. And we can. And it is up to us. And it is our moment for the seizing, if you will. And you know, it's a moment in history, I believe, that comes around only rarely, when you see almost in real time a dramatic shift in the political landscape. And I really believe that's what we saw last night, a dramatic shift in the political landscape, not just in Europe, but or the UK, but also in Europe and here in the United States. And I believe that this bodes well for a fellow by the name of Donald J. Trump. And it does not bode well for a fellow by the name of Barry Satoru Obama.
Well, you know, of course, that his poutiness is going to be going to all the radio comedy and TV comedy shows to explain himself.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll
Bless
see.
Darling heart and stupid head.
Indeed, indeed. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we got some more American Adversaries Drive Time Primetime Show. And please don't forget to participate in tonight's poll question. How do you feel about Marco Rubio? Does it give you one of them tingles down your leg, or is it just make you want to yawn? We'll be right back. All right, right, welcome back to the show, folks. Thanks so much for being with us tonight. You are listening to the American Adversaries. By the way, Dr. K is in Denver tonight. That's why.
What's he trying to do? He's trying to buy an arena football team.
He's still into that arena football stuff. All right. By the way, the Predators are playing downtown tonight against the cross-state rival, the Tampa Bay Storm. That's always a good game. And
this one's dedicated to what happened at Pulse.
The terrorist attack. And there'll be 49 seats, empty seats, dedicated to the 49 people who were killed that night. And also, if you are a police officer, first responder, or medical personnel, the game is free for you.
Right.
So as long as there are seats, get on down there to the arena, Amway Arena, and kickoff, I believe, is at 7:30. So it ought to be an exciting game, too.
Yeah, it's going to be loud.
It should be. All right. So that's compliments of David Siegel, the current owner of the Orlando Predators. So please do take advantage of that. And don't forget to take advantage of listening to Aubrey and I tomorrow on Aubrey's show, Talk to the Experts. We'll be on 1520 WBZW or AM660TheAnswer.com. And we'll be talking home repairs and home maintenance and home buying and home selling and all that good stuff. And, of course, then we'll be back on Sunday night with our three-hour classic tour. And also, don't forget, we got a couple of events coming up. I want to remind you, Monday, you have David Wood. And he, once again, was on our show the other day. He's an expert on Islam. He'll be giving be speaking Monday, as I said, at the Fellowship Church. It starts at 6:30. That Fellowship Church is located on Red Bug Road, 5145 Red Bug Road. And that's right there by the fire station. That is free, and after the he speaks, he'll be doing a question and answer session, and then usually they go like right next door and have a little dinner afterwards. So you might even have an informal question and answer session with him as well. David Wood, and that once again is Monday, 6:30 Fellowship Church on Red Bug Road. And then don't forget and put this on, block your calendar out for this Friday, August the 5th. At the Tijuana Flats in Winter Springs, which is at the corner of 434 and Tuscaloosa Boulevard. That is a Friday. As I said, it's going to be the last blast of Summer Family Festival. And it's going to be fun for the whole family. It starts at 6 o'clock. Special entertainment for the kids from 6 to 7. And from 7 to 10, a great guitarist and singer, Wendy Benson, is going to be entertaining people on the patio. And there's going to be all kinds of fun for the kids and adults. And, by the way, teachers get half off their entree for lunch both Thursday and Friday. Okay, so it's a special treat for the family and teachers, too. And that's at Tijuana Flats. And, of course, we'll be telling you more about that as the time approaches. But please don't forget to put that on your calendar. And please don't forget to check out our brand new website. We're real proud of it. Kathy Santomassino and James have put a tremendous amount of work into this thing. They do a lot of work behind the scenes for us here, part of the team. And they've been working on it again this week. The latest thing we've put up is what we're calling our bulletin board or ad page, which is for advertisements just on the website. Say you want to be a part of the American Adversaries team, a part of the American Adversaries army, and you have a business. Say, like me, maybe a carpenter, or maybe you're an electrician or a plumber or something like that. This would be a great place to place your ad so that as our listeners, if they have that kind of need, they know that they can go to our website, they'll find your ad there, and be able to send you some business. And those ads are very reasonably priced, and you can be a part of the American Adversaries team without having to, you know, be a full-fledged sponsor if you can't afford ads on the air, that sort of thing.
And the ads work, I know.
Yeah, Aubrey has been a sponsor of the show for, I want to say, almost 4 years now.
Almost four.
Yeah, Pasquale Barba with Cafe Positano, they've been with us over five. So it does work. Ladies and gentlemen, radio advertising does work, and it may not work for everybody. But for a lot of you, it will work. And we have several options now for you to take advantage of what we do here. And one of those options is our brand new ad page on our brand new website, AmericanAdversaries.com. And, of course, you can always go there and join the American Adversaries Army, too. You can be a recruit, you can be an officer, or you can be a general. That's right. And we'll give you the proper accoutrements, whichever rank that you come in at. We really do appreciate that. And the website, like I said, has got a lot to offer on there, and it's real easy to navigate. We got a wall of fame, we're calling it, where we got pictures up there and things like that. We're tied in with the American Adversaries Twitter feed on there. So you're a tweeter? We're getting there. We're easing into the 21st century here. 16 years in, we're easing into it. So
I still don't tweet. Tweeting's for
Twitter. Yeah, there you go. So anyway, AmericanAdversaries.com. Please do check it out if you have not. And if you have checked it out but not recently, please recheck it out. And of course, as I said, you can always listen to us when we're on the air or whatever is being streamed at AM660TheAnswer.com. If it's us, if it's Michael Medved, Mike Gallagher, Larry Elder, who comes up after us at 7 o'clock in the evenings, Monday through Friday. You can always hear that by going to our website, AmericanAdversaries.com, and hit that Listen Live button on the homepage, and whatever is being streamed, whoever is on at that time, you will be able to hear it while you're perusing around our website. So please do take advantage of that. All right, we got another hard break coming up, and then we got another half hour of the show to go. But as I said, if you've not downloaded the app or can't listen on the computer, the Rays pregame show is coming up. So, Nick LoCicero, why don't you give us one more update on our poll question before we go off the airwaves? Can you do that? Did I catch you off guard?
Yeah, but that's fine. Let me take a second to pull it up on our really fast, quick, free WORLAMFM app.
There you go. And by the way, if you have an Android device and you're having problems downloading that thing, just call Nick on the call-in line. He'll walk you through it.
Whoa, let's see. It looks like...
have we had a shift?
Well, a little bit. Looks like we're asking your excitement level for Marco Rubio going for his re-election bid. Looks like that basement level number one thought the American Adversaries already picked out his next career is now at 50%. So you're back up to 50% there.
All right.
In the basement, the least popular answer is he quit the job once. Why would I vote for him this time?
All right. Okay. All right. So we'll go ahead and continue to take poll results until the final tally at the end of the show. And then next week we'll have new poll questions all shiny and brand new and ready to be responded to. All right. Once again, we're still here. We're still live. And you can be a part of it, too. Just give us a call at 407. All right, welcome back to the show, folks, and that is our friend Mark Merrow, and he did come through his open heart surgery, and of course, we're still holding him in our prayers as he's recovering, and we hope to have him back on the air with us soon, and get him back up and out there and giving those great inspirational speeches to our high school and middle school students about the ills of bullying. So that's our man, Mark Merrow. I am Christopher Hart, along with Aubrey Kahn. We're here. We're live. And once again, you can be a part of the show. Just give us a call. 407-774-8255 is the number. And, you know, we've been talking about this British exit vote. And one of the members of parliament over there, I believe, called it their Independence Day. And I don't know if I'd go as far as to say that, but nonetheless, it does quite, I think, accurately express the sentiment that a lot of people who were voting to exit the European Union felt, that they were no longer an independent country. And in fact, they were not.
They weren't, and they weren't being given any consideration.
No.
They were treated like the unwanted stepchild.
Yeah.
All the European Union wanted from them was money.
Basically that, yeah, as them to be a money center, that sort of thing. But mainly, as our caller earlier, Ed, said, this was an attempt at globalization. You globalize Europe, and then you just spread it out from there, so to speak. And you do it along with trade deals and alliances.
Yeah, and, trade deals.
Yeah.
In other words, bribery and corruption.
Right. And these alliances, like the European Union, are not military alliances. These were more financial alliances, alliances to usurp the sovereign authorities of the governments in those countries and to leave them basically helpless basket cases when you do have a financial crisis, as we had in 2008, 2009. And, of course, all of those countries were ill-equipped to be able to do anything about it because they couldn't make their own decisions.
Right. They were being held hostage.
Yeah, that's right. Got a couple of headlines here from a couple of British tabloids. The one, the Daily Mirror, says, "We're out. Britain votes to quit the EU. Pound goes into free fall." Not exactly a free fall, but it did go down some. And then the Sun says, "See you later." Very clever, very clever. But as I said, I do believe this is very, very significant. But some other things, as I said, did happen this week that were not good for Barack Obama. He lost in the Supreme Court, just barely, but he did lose, and it was very significant. Also, the turnaround, if you will, with the transcripts from the Orlando terrorist, where they first were going to redact them and then decided to redact the redacts. So we got to see the full transcript. They did end up changing. They didn't put Allah down. They used the word God. But I think that didn't do them any good. I think it may have actually done their argument, if you will, some harm. And all along, Donald Trump has just been sort of being Donald Trump. He yesterday announced, by the way, that he is going to write off the loan of $50 million that he made to his primary campaign. As he was self-financing his campaign, he was loaning it money. Now, if he were a true politician, what he would do is fundraise to pay himself back. In other words, fundraise for his campaign to pay himself back. He has said today that he will not do that, that $50 million loan, quote-unquote, he's writing off. So in other words, he's now making that a $50 million contribution that he has already made to his campaign, so that does not have to be paid off. So any money he does raise or put in now again himself will go towards carrying this forward rather than paying back. So he is continuing to self-fund. He says he's determined to continue to do that. He likes that better. He admitted he doesn't like going around begging for money. And most people with integrity wouldn't like it, right? And because you know that it's a dirty game. You know that if you're going and begging people for a lot of money and they're willing to give it to you, they're not willing just to give it to you. You know what I mean?
They'd be calling in favors.
They'll want a little something for it, right? At least a photograph in the White House or something. They're going to want something. But the bottom line is they're going to want something. And he doesn't want to be beholden to people. And I don't blame him, not one bit. But he is he had a good week because Obama and Hillary had a bad week by default. Plus, he gave the speech the other day.
Well, America had a good week because Obama had a bad week.
Yeah, well, that goes without saying. I guess those kind of go hand in hand,
right?
Don't they? But he did also give the speech the other day about Hillary Clinton. That's been a little bit overshadowed by other events. You had the sit-in, and part of the reason for the sit-in, I do believe, was to take some of the attention away from Donald Trump in that speech. Not the sole reason, but you know, if you can kill two birds with one stone, why not? I think it failed, but they tried. And then, of course, you had the British exit vote also overshadowing Trump's speech. But that speech is going to be repeated. Those things that he brought up in that speech the other day are going to be repeated over and over ad nauseum throughout this election season. And that is not going to be good for Hillary Clinton. And this book, Clinton Cash, and the movie that the hour-long documentary or docudrama or whatever it's going to be that's coming out here between the conventions, those allegations are, shall we say, going to be hard for Hillary to get around. She's already, trying to say, oh, he's going after my foundation, and we give money to poor people. Well, the problem is they don't give money, to at least not very much. And that is going to come out, and she's not going to be able to get away. Those are facts, and those are hard things to get away from, even if you're Hillary Clinton. And where they do best is when things are sort of gray and not clear. These things are clear. And you have the former Secret Service agent, this guy named Byrne, Gary Byrne, who has written a book, and it's coming out here in a couple of weeks, about her demeanor and her temperament and her temper. And we've heard these things before, but they're going to come out now with an intensity that we haven't seen, at least not for a long time. And Hillary Clinton, I don't believe, is prepared for facing the truth. She has lived a life of lies, one lie after another, and eventually the lies sort of run their course, and the liar just doesn't know what to do because they're so used to lying. And when the truth hits them square between the eyes, they are usually the last one to know, and that'll be fine with me. If she's the last one to know, it doesn't matter. What matters is that the people who vote know, at least enough of the people who vote know the truth and act on it. And you combine that with this mood, this wave that we saw expressed in Britain last night, chances are she's going to get run over by a locomotive. Now, I'm not saying that this is going to be a landslide decision for Donald Trump, but any win is going to be like getting run over by a locomotive as far as Hillary Clinton is concerned and as far as the liberals are concerned, especially if the engineer of that locomotive is wearing a Make America Great hat. like the train engineers used to wear. They had those hats, right? If you got old Donald Trump pulling the whistle and blowing the whistle, any kind of loss to him is going to be absolutely devastating to the liberal cause. And make no mistake about it, even though he's not a dyed-in-the-wool conservative, it will still be seen as a devastating defeat for liberalism and liberals like Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. And that's the way it should be, in my mind. And I think history, like I said, is swinging back in that direction, in favoring conservatives. Time will tell, but I believe that's what will happen. A couple of other things. I wanted to comment briefly yesterday about the other big Supreme Court decision that came out having to do with affirmative action. And this was a case where Anthony Kennedy once again deserted his conservative compatriots on the court and sided with the liberals in a 4-3 decision. It should have been 4-3 the other way, but he made it 4-3 for the liberals. And by the way, Elena Kagan recused herself from the case because she had worked on it while she was in the Solicitor General's office for the Obama administration. So she clearly had to recuse herself. But nonetheless, Anthony Kennedy was the deciding vote. And he based his opinion on, and he wrote the opinion for the court, that previous court opinions had already made it clear that what the University of Texas was doing was okay. And what they were doing was, it was affirmative action. They were awarding a certain number of, admitting a certain number of students to the university based on race and other factors. They were sued by a girl who claimed that she didn't get in because of that reason. And in essence, the lower courts decided that she probably wouldn't have been admitted regardless of the race part of the affirmative action. Not because she was white, but because she didn't meet the other criteria that we wouldn't qualify so much as affirmative action, but certainly had the intent of eliminating people, right? For instance, their freshman class, they sought guaranteed that if you graduated into the top 10% of your Texas high school, you could get admitted. She didn't graduate in the top 10% of her Texas high school. So even though that wasn't affirmative action, that immediately eliminated her anyway. So it wasn't a groundbreaking case, but nonetheless, it was another disappointment that Anthony Kennedy would swing over and side with the liberals instead of the conservatives. However, in this one, I can see sort of legal arguments that it really wasn't so much about affirmative action. So I don't want to get too much into the weeds on that. Just enough to say that Anthony Kennedy, once again, has turned out to be anything but a good conservative. And then there's the black boxes. Did you hear that they found the black boxes from that Egypt Air plane that went down in the Mediterranean
Sea? I knew they'd gotten one, and they said time was starting to run out.
They found them both, and they were both, quote-unquote, extensively damaged, which once again indicates to me that that plane came down hard and fast.
Right.
And, you know, which would indicate a terrorist or explosion occurred on the aircraft.
Something extremely violent.
And exactly. And we know that two of the cockpit windows were, quote unquote, breached. In other words, broken or blown out.
And those are bulletproof.
Yeah, exactly. And if the cockpit windows go out, the pilot's, let's just say he's put at a disadvantage, right?
You can't see too well.
Yeah, an airplane going, 500 miles an hour and the windshield's gone? Yeah, that makes it a little harder to see, yeah. So they have recovered them, but they have yet to recover the information. They were so badly damaged that through normal techniques, they have not been able to recover any of the information. At least that's what we're being told. So that they're being sent to a special laboratory in France where they have special equipment and have been able to recover things on these recorders before where it's been, you know, impossible for other people to do it. So we are still waiting to see, but we shall see if they can download the information. But once again, just the fact that they are in such damaged condition. I mean, these things are built to withstand a plane crash, right? And in a plane crash, they were badly damaged. It just tells you the magnitude of the crash force,
mm-hmm. Right.
that occurred. And so, once again, we'll see what happens. So, all right, we got to take one more break for tonight's show. Then we come back one more segment. Then it's weekend time. Thank God it's Friday, right? I'm ready to go home and hit the sack is what I'm ready to do. And wake up about 12 o'clock tomorrow so I can come down here and do Talk to the Experts with Aubrey at 1 o'clock.
At least you'll be refreshed.
Oh, I doubt it. I need about 5 days of sleep like that. All right, anyway, we got another segment of the show to go, and I hope you will stay with us and join us as we take you into the weekend.
Blame it all on my roots. I showed up in boots and ruined your black tie affair. Last one to know, last one to show, I was the last one you thought you'd see there. And I saw the surprise and the fear in his eyes, and I took his glass of champagne. I toasted you, said, honey, we may be through, and you'll never hear me complain. 'Cause I got friends in
low places. You going to sing along there, Aubrey?
No. I've taken the advice of my children.
Oh, I'd like to just sit back and, never mind. All right, you are listening to the American Adversaries. Did you hear where they planted Omar?
In a Muslim cemetery down
in South Florida. Yeah, Omar Mateen was buried in the Muslim cemetery of South Florida near Hialeah, and
I won't go visiting his grave. I promise.
I might go spit on it, but I don't believe his daughter. Noor, I'm not his daughter. I mean his wife, his latest wife, Noor Solomon Mateen, was there. She evidently is still so well in hiding that no one knows where she's at, or at least no one's talking. Once again, I don't know why the woman is not in jail. If this had, let's just imagine just for a moment that the liberals' dream comes true, and this was a white supremacist, you know, gay-hating man who went in there and shot these people up, right?
She would have been in jail long.
And his wife had driven him around to help him find a target. Not only would his wife be in jail, but probably everybody he ever knew would be in jail along with him, right? This is ridiculous. Let's see. The man's father, Siddiqui himself, Siddiqui Mateen, the father, claimed the body and made the arrangements. Once again, the wife is still out there somewhere. Maybe she's hanging out with Bin Laden's ex-bodyguard.
She might be in the White House.
She might be. They both might be. Mm-hmm. You know, he was released unconditionally. So basically that means they opened the door and said, see you later, partner.
You know, that's why they've built the 11-foot fences now. Not necessarily to keep the public out, but maybe to keep him in.
At the White House, you mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe they are.
Funny how that works, right? Yeah. 11-foot fence because don't want people intruding into the White House lawn, but...
But a wall?
A wall? We don't need a wall.
No, that wouldn't do any good anyway, right? That wouldn't
because
do...
the people come in and they mix and they live with the lower class, the people that have to vote for us.
That's what it is, yeah. Indeed, the people who have to vote for us. All right. Out there was Islamic State has called for attacks. Where did you say again, Aubrey?
Brussels and Berlin.
Berlin.
They plan on paralyzing Europe.
Now,
what's new?
Yeah, well, of course, it's a lot easier now that they've got some infiltrators already in country, right?
We've got training camps for them here, too, over 30.
Yeah, well... once again, you know, this whole thing about what swept through Britain over the last couple of days, I think that wind is going to be blowing over here, too. And Hillary Clinton's idea of dramatically increasing the number, for instance, of Syrian refugees coming into this country is not going to be a good campaign talking point. Let's put it that way.
Well, Loretta Lynch will love them.
Oh, yeah. She's got a lot of love to spread around.
She sure does.
Pound for pound, but she's got a lot of love to spread around.
If her theory was practical and worked, why hasn't she applied that to murderers and rapists and other people that are not Muslim?
Well, because obviously it doesn't work. It's ludicrous, it's absurd, and it was inappropriate at that time and moment for her to even mention something as stupid as that.
But, you know, these people in the administration, they think we're all that stupid.
Well, that's the problem, yeah. Yeah. That's...
We can't find one woman in this country who's been driving her husband around, who's gone and assisted her husband in slaughtering 49 innocent people, but we can vet all these people that are coming in as refugees. It's safe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, tell me another one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we know much better than that, of course. But that's the kind of nonsense that they're trying to push over on us. But once again, like I said, I believe this week we saw clear examples of how things are different now, how things are changing or have changed. And the fact that they had to go back and redact the redact. In other words, put the words back in.
Yeah, but they still changed words
I understand, but the fact that they went and put the words back in, and you can change a couple of the words. They put God instead of Allah, but the message is still there. The message comes through loud and clear. This guy did this because he was a Muslim extremist. And, oh, by the way, the headline of the Orlando Sentinel today, I got it right here. Let me read it so I can be accurate. It has to do with one of the arguments of one of the things why so many people were mystified as to his motive. They thought maybe he had some underlying gay tendencies. So here's the headline today's Orlando Sentinel: Feds find no evidence Pulse gunman was gay. He was not gay. He was there to kill gays.
Right.
He was because that's what Muslims do. They eliminate gays.
They throw them off the.
Because it is an act of compassion. Remember the Mufti? He actually came here to town up in Sanford.
Right.
And in a very calm, reasonable voice, just like Loretta Lynch uses, what we do is we do the compassionate thing.
We throw them off the top of buildings.
Yes, this is the compassionate thing to do, you see, to rid them of their gayness, because they can't be gay. It's not right. So we take care of that for them. Yeah, that's their idea of and so he was just, you know, doing what he's supposed to do as a good old Muslim. And we don't know why he did it. We don't know why he did it. Well, and then, of course, the transcripts make it very damn clear why he did it. Once again, though, my point is that they had to change it back. Things are different. Things are changing. And the pendulum is a swinging. And it's now swinging in the right direction. And let's just hope that it swings a long time and goes high and hard in the right direction. All right, that's going to wrap it up for tonight's show. Hope you're ready for the weekend. I know we are, and we got a big weekend of some live programming right here. 15:20 tomorrow with Talk to the Experts, which is going to include Aubrey and me. I don't know how I got in here. And then, of course, it's going to be the American Adversary Sunday evening 3-hour classic tour. And that'll be Sunday night right here live at 5. Right?
Yep. Have a swinging good time.
See you tomorrow, Aubrey.
Yes, sirree. God bless everyone.
Night, everybody.
Bye.
FM 105.5 at AM 660. The Answer. WORL, Altamont Springs, Orlando. The official radio station of